Hello and welcome to the Kadai Podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me are Craig.
Hello.
Dave.
Hi there.
And Tori.
Good morning, Internet.
So this covers The Hope of Elantris, which is a short story set during the ending of the book Elantris from a different point of view. But as always, we start with Good Thing. Tori, why don't we start with yours?
Okay. Well, there was a book I read a little while ago that I really enjoyed, not Sanderson. It was called Six of Crows by Lee, I think it's Bardugo. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. Definitely starts with a B, though.
But Six you're of a Crows, pronunciation person.
Well, I mean, if I listen to the audiobook, they're not exactly going to drop the author's name in the middle of the plot, so...
I mean, but they do at the beginning.
But I read it, like, on paper.
Okay.
Someone is a stickler for details here. I think you should continue, Tori.
Anyway, Six of Crows and the sequel, Crooked Kingdom. It's two books, and then they're done. That's the whole series. And it was really good. It was sort of it's a heist story, so think Ocean's 11. You know, there's the whole group of thieves, and everyone has their own talent, and there's...
And the monkey's driving the van?
Yeah. No, there's no vans. But it's
sort
of...
Are there monkeys?
Fantasy, kind of steampunky. No monkeys, but there was magic, and some shady underdealings with, like, drug lords and crime bosses, and anyway, I really enjoyed it. So if you're into cool fantasy books, go check out Six of Crows.
All right, but I mean, no monkey and no vans. I don't think I'm sold.
Just bear with me here.
I mean, it's fantasy, and you said steampunky?
Yeah, it had some steampunk elements.
That sounds like a win to me.
Yeah, because even though it was sort of a fantasy setting, it was sort of a pseudo-Victorian city with guns and some slight, like, technology, but not really. Just check it out.
Okay.
Is this the episode where they break into Gringotts to get the wand of power or something?
Right, that happened. That was the one.
I imagine it's a better heist story than that part of the Harry Potter novels was.
All right, Dave, why don't you follow us up?
Ooh, okay. I got this new game by, I think I actually mentioned Manufactoria as a good thing a few weeks ago. Well, the guys that made that game also made a game that's available on Steam and was on summer sale. And that game is called Silicon Zeros. And actually, a friend of mine at church mentioned that, as well as a couple of other programming puzzle games that are out on Steam. And I've been playing Silicon Zeros nonstop for 3 or 4 days right after I bought it. And it's a lot of fun. The story's kind of cheesy, but the actual puzzles are pretty cool.
So where Manufactoria is a finite state machine simulator, Silicon Zeros is system architecture. Which is neat. It's different. It's very different from Manufactoria, but if you're into how computers work at all, it goes through that. It's really neat.
Yeah, I even kind of learned a little bit about how hardware works and how CPUs take information from chips and stuff. And Craig helped me out with that too, since Craig is a professional programmer and I am merely a hobbyist that also likes playing puzzle games.
You know, I sort of wish those kind of games existed back when I was at college. Like, I recommend them to anybody, like, learning the field. Like, you know, give this try. Just play the game. And then after a while, you're like, hey, look, you're actually learning how, you know, system architecture works. And then it just, once it clicks, it's amazing.
So
it's one of the best courses I had in college.
It's kind of similar to how, like, if you want to be a rocket scientist and work for NASA, you should maybe give Kerbal Space Program a try.
I mean, it's not exact, but it taught me more about orbital mechanics than I thought I would ever learn in my lifetime.
Didn't Randall Munroe, a former employee of NASA, say that he learned more from Kerbal Space
yes.
Program than he actually did in college?
Yes, he did.
At least in one of his comics, he said that. However true that is, I don't know.
I mean, let's be honest. When you can apply the knowledge, it's going to sink in a lot better than if you're just trying to memorize formulas or work them out on paper. Like, seeing it in action goes a long way to actually demonstrating how it works. And the same thing goes with Silicon Zeros, because you're actually watching the process happen, and then it's sort of like, oh, I understand what this thing is doing now.
Well, yeah, and they hand you out puzzles, you know, progressively so that you understand each part at a time, too.
In regards to Randall Munroe, he did mention in that comic, in the secret text, that he didn't actually work on orbital mechanics while he was at NASA. He just sort of picked stuff up because it's there. So,
yeah.
So KSP teaching him more still did kind of make sense. Craig, how about you?
So, I realize that people watching this, listening to this in the future, this won't necessarily apply, but this week is Games Done Quick, which is the awesome, well, okay, this time is Summer Games Done Quick, but it's the awesome games marathon for charity. During the summertime, they do it for Doctors Without Borders, so that's what's going on right now. They end up raising usually around $2 million for charity. And that's going on right now. It's 24-hour speed runs for like a week. And it has a great presentation. I feel like they've gotten better this year than it was in the past. Like, it's snappier. They're getting through
this, too. Since this will be over by the time the recording comes out, keep your eyes open in the beginning of January, because that's when their next scheduled event is going to be.
Well, that's what I was going to get at. They have one every 6 months. Summer Games Done Quick tends to be late June, early July. Awesome Games Done Quick, which usually happens like early to late January.
And you can meet Craig there.
And you can meet Dave there.
Oh, are you both going to AGDQ 2019?
We'll have to talk about it. I might. I'll work details out with Dave offline.
Okay.
So it's very good, and I recommend anyone to check it out. If you're at least interested in video games at all, just the fact that they're doing this for charity is awesome.
So my good thing this week is, so a few weeks ago, Dave, you did the combination Super Metroid, A Link to the Past randomizer as your good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About a week and a half ago, this guy on Twitch named Cross Product made a Plandomizer, which is a planned randomizer for that combo rando. And it was super cool to watch. I am terrible at Super Metroid, so I'm not ever going to play it, but
you're
going to watch
enjoy
people
struggle.
Right.
Go on, Mike. Tell them how long it took. Do you know how long it took me? Were you watching the end?
Yeah, I was watching your whole thing. You clocked in at, what, like 9.5 hours?
No. Well, close. 9 hours and I think, look, 12 minutes or something like that.
Yes.
Nine hours.
That's a fundamental difference, and I clearly am in the wrong here.
It's true. You're going to get called out, because I'm proud of that 9-hour time.
It was a segmented run, though.
It was. I had to sleep.
Yeah, DQ.
I actually, I stopped at 6 hours in, and yeah, the fact that it ended up taking me 9, it was a good call. 3 hours, I would not have made it.
So it relied on, for like the first key item, it relied on Zelda knowledge of just like little Easter egg-y things.
No, Zelda meme knowledge. Meme knowledge plus, like you said, the Easter egg thing, because who knew about selling the fish?
Well, if you bothered picking up the single arrow at the race game, he does tell you to talk to Cross Product at the tavern.
Yeah, and Cross Product tells you, go to the wishing well.
Yeah.
But then after that, I'm like, fish lover? What the? And then I never checked again.
I knew about that.
If I end up releasing that for another race, I'm going to change some of the text so that's a little more obvious.
I would have also liked to see I don't know how you would have managed this, but if you could have given the blacksmith a special message when you hit the sword with your hammer.
Oh yeah,
because they yell at you when you do that. That would have been a cool thing.
Oh, true. I mean, hammer came pretty late. So
it usually does.
By the way,
I have to say, that Plandomizer taught me a lot more about Super Metroid. And so I had a learning session with Wild Anaconda beforehand, thankfully, because he taught me a bunch of the tricks that were needed for the Plando anyway. And then just being able to execute them, and I'm like, okay, now I understand a little better. I did make things harder for myself because I was trying to do stupid things rather than just going to the intended path.
Yeah, trying to snail clip an aqueduct without gravity suit.
Sure, yes.
For 2 hours. You would have beaten Nyako if you didn't do that. You finished.
Well, I didn't know, and I thought it would be easier, and I was dead wrong. I should have just did what you wanted us to do.
So, speaking of intended paths...
What I wanted you to do, it wasn't really that obvious. I even had one of the creators, or not the, one of the creator of Combined Randomizer in the call with me for the first race, and he was like, oh, I didn't even think about getting there without such and such item. That's really smart.
Well,
you have to rewrite the code.
Well, the part that got me stuck was going to Watering Hole, which you gave us the clue, and I was stubborn about going. I'm like, that is such a long path. I'm just going to try to do this other thing instead, which was stupid. If I had just gone where you told me to go, it would have been fine.
All right, so on the topic of intended paths, the really interesting thing about the Plando is that for almost all major items, there were two ways to go about it. So most Plandos is like very linear. You go from one thing to the next thing to the next thing because that's what the creator intended you to do. In this one, there's the smart way, and then there's the I already screwed that up, so now I have to do this the long dumb way. Like, spoilers for anyone who may decide to play this, stop listening now and come back in like 30 seconds. If you save the mushroom at the very beginning until almost to the end of the thing, you can do the fake powder glitch and get ice rod, and it's cool. Or you can wait until you actually get real powder way, 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 way at the end, and you have to go through a lot more stuff to get it.
I mean, skipping pendant dungeons is not a big deal compared to the other things you had to do. It's just the fact that this cross-product fellow thought of the two different paths.
Sounds like a jerk.
So, yeah.
Well, if you sell your mushroom, then you have to double-dip Turtle Rock, double-dip Wreck Chip. It's pretty awful.
Yeah, but you also have to know that you have to double-dip Gauntlet. Like, you have to understand the bug, and I didn't know that the bug existed.
Well,
with the progressive items?
The swords in Gauntlet were supposed to teach you that so that you didn't make that same mistake in Sand Pits.
Which Craig did.
Yeah.
That's because I didn't feel like doing it again. I'm like, whatever. I'll just get it and go. Because, you know, you gave an alternate path. It's cool. But yeah, it's... If you don't know the bug, like... Yeah, I don't know. You have to be aware of the bug in the code. Plus, you have to, you know, do Gauntlet twice to get that sword. So that way you can skip the sword from the mushroom.
Alright, so let's get started on what we're doing today, which is the Hope of Elantris. So, Dave, you want to walk us through what happened?
Okay, first I'm going to actually go into the post log, the postscript here, and give a little background. And so this story came about because Brandon Sanderson was dating an 8th grade English teacher named Emily, who's now his wife, or at the time of this publication is his wife. I guess they're probably still married. I don't know.
Yeah, they're still together. They have kids.
I'm not allowed to read his autobiography.
You can read his autobiography.
Anyway, so he was dating an English teacher, and she had a student named... I was trying to pronounce it Elantrianly, like, the whole time I was reading the book, so I was like, Maytaisa? Maytaisi? But apparently this is a... because she's the protagonist in the story. So basically, Emily has a student who's a fan of Brandon Sanderson, read Elantris, wrote a fanfic, and turned it into school, and Brandon said, hey, I'm going to publish this, and there you have it. Took what? Some little girl's fanfic and published it.
No. No, that's
a
not...
a book report. Not quite.
Fanfic.
she made, like... on Elantris. Okay. What she made was, like, this very cool, like, book report kind of thing, but, like, what if Elantris was a real place and, like, here are, you know, major exports, and it was very, very cool. And there were feelies.
Yeah, there's feels, I guess.
Well, there are also feels, but feelies, like,
if it's a deep dive podcast, then I guess we'll find out what the book report was like.
Do you remember old games like Monkey Island that, like, if you buy, like, the inbox version, it comes with, like, little doodads and maps and junk?
Yeah.
Yes.
Feelies.
That are required to beat the game.
How did Hope of Elantris come with feelies?
The girl made the thing.
Isn't that the thing? Isn't that the
I like just frustrating, like,
New World?
The fun
are you
part.
Talking about, like, the feelies, like, in Brave New World that are, like...
He's gonna get so tired of us, and he's just gonna mute us, and it's just gonna be him and Tori.
Yeah, don't worry, he's not gonna feel like editing it.
Oh.
So, I get the idea that,
you're talking about, like, little pieces of fabric and stuff.
Yeah, this is Sanderson's
first okay, yeah.
published book, and then for... The woman he's dating to be like, hey, one of my students did a book report on your book. Can you imagine what that must have been like for him as a new author?
It was pretty,
oh, yeah.
It was pretty touching. It was really cool.
So, anyway, what he says in that postscript that Dave is butchering for us is that he kind of wrote this story for that little girl in her honor, as his sort of his first fan. And I think that's really cool of him.
It is really cool. I was being silly. So the story, you know, Brandon kind of had the idea, you know, when Elantris was being sacked by the Drakkor, he made a promise to Kayreta, one of his characters, that the children would be kept safe during the sacking, so... He fleshes that out and goes into more detail. So, the
you know, I like how you made them sound like dragons. Drakkor.
Drakkor? There's no R at the beginning.
There is no R, but it sounds Drakkor. Funny because then I pictured these lizard dudes instead of the weird bone.
Right, with all their twisted bones and.
But wait, well, what is it?
Like
bony, muscly.
Ashenvale, if you wander too far from the town in Ashenvale, you have like level 90 mobs that just jump you.
Hang on, I just have to scroll up, and then I
yeah,
can
what
find...
did he call them? Bony, muscly dudes?
Right.
Did I write that in Discord,
you wrote
that
it
on
in my
chat?
Yeah, you wrote it in my chat, so we'd have to look at my
Dang
VODs.
Alright, never mind.
Oh well.
Big, muscly, bony guys, I think. I don't know. It's gone forever now. Dang it.
Or we could just listen to last week's podcast.
That's way too much work. No.
You don't even edit. Why would you listen?
I listen more than you do.
I as soon as every episode comes out, I listen to half of it.
All right.
Which actually was pretty cool. I guess if Seth is around next week, this maybe fits more in the recap. But I thought it was cool that Seth thought they were going toward a democracy as well. That's something that I had mentioned. But anyway, so what happens, this story, it says takes place after Elantris, but really just the framework takes place after Elantris. It's like Raiden's sitting at the dinner table waiting for Serenity to show up, and she's like, I'm pregnant. It's going to take me like 2 extra hours to get to dinner. And so he's like, oh, all right. So, Aishi, what were you up to during the end of the last book? Kind of lost track of you for a little bit there. So Aishi tells a story about Matissa and how she was like, I guess she's like, it doesn't say her exact age, but she's a young adult, I guess maybe like 15 to 17 or something like that. And she's in charge of taking care of the younger children in Elantris. And she and Daishi, who became a father figure to her in Elantris, save the kids from the Dakor and hide them in the library so that they don't have to go through all of the suffering that the other Elantrians did, right, you know, on the little pyre pile right before, I guess it was a pretty big pyre pile, right before Raiden drew the chasm line in the giant's Rayo Aeon. And yeah, that's what happens. So for
I guess just a future thing, Sanderson does happen. He tributes people in his life. So frequently you'll have characters that are named after people that he's interacted with in some way. Like he'll name characters and typically their personality after people that he knows in life. And this is sort of like, you know, a little thank you type thing. You get to be a character in my book. So it is something that will frequently
like
pop
Houlihan.
Up. Houlihan.
From Legend of Zelda.
Like the Houlihaner. But I mean, it's not like a competition or anything. It's usually just, hey, you know.
Competition.
So you'll see it more in later books, but because I can't.
I might see it, or I might not know who any of these people are, so it might just.
We might mention it.
Unless it's like, unless there's a character named Orson, I'm not gonna know.
No, you probably won't know who they are, but we might mention, hey, this was named after, you know, his editor or something like that. Like it happened.
Is there one book with a character named Craig?
No.
Named after the guy that Brandon played Magic with one time.
There was a bunch of us, but I won. I beat him with my crappy drafted deck, which I have in front of me somewhere.
For when he was finishing the Wheel of Time, he had like dozens, potentially hundreds of characters that he needed to name. So he just basically like had raffles amongst his fans. And if you won, your name got into the book somewhat. They all got like adjusted slightly.
Yeah.
But yeah.
They all became impossible to pronounce.
So this is certainly not the first that this has happened. And I think Mike, you mentioned this. I don't know if it was last week, but originally the title of Elantris should have been The Spirit of Elantris.
Yes.
And this, of course, goes along with it, being Hope of Elantris. And who knows what the sequel shall be called, but I imagine it would be Blank of Elantris.
Light of Elantris. I think it's pronounced Elantris.
In-universe, yes, but no one, including Brandon, pronounces it that way.
So I kind of forgot who Daishi was in the story. I thought he was the dude they threw in the pool, but I guess not, because he wouldn't have been around during the sacking of the Dakor.
Daishi the Ion?
No, Daishi.
I'm sorry.
Matissa's
I thought
father.
You said Aishi. I was confused for a moment. I'm like,
the soldier dad.
Yeah, who was the soldier? Who was like the leader of Raiden's guard that was brutally maimed when they attacked the little girl?
Thalen got thrown in the pool.
Okay.
Thalen was Raiden's lead soldier, and Daishi was Karita's lead soldier.
Okay.
Which, I don't remember Daishi being in the main story, but he may have been mentioned.
He's mentioned, but he doesn't play that much of a part. But I think he does more with the children anyway. Like, I think when they first, you know, when
When
Karada.
Daishi was unhappy about it and was going to go and attack Aangden's band. And that was when Raiden went to confront Aangden.
That makes sense, though, since he was with the children, since they were in K-Reita's territory for Raiden. and she teamed up.
All right. So overall, what did you think of the Hope of Elantris?
It was cute.
All right. Overall, what did you think of the Hope of Elantris before you read the author's afterword?
It was cute. It was a little fill-in story. You know, it gives fleshes out a little bit of the world, and I like the idea that Brandon knows what's going on everywhere at all times in his stories, and this kind of shows it. So that was pretty cool. Yeah. You can't write every little detail about everything because of pacing. And I'm borrowing from the postscript again, but he mentions that. But even as I'm reading it, I was like, okay, so this is what was happening. It didn't really seem like he was just writing it in to write a filler story. It seemed like this was something that he had in mind and wanted to put into the book, but didn't have time. So it seemed like it fit in and it was well thought out, and, you know, he understood what was going on even without having let us know initially. So
it's like a deleted scene.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, that's a great way to put it. It didn't seem like a tack-on story. It seemed like a deleted scene that fit in, but there wasn't time for it. So, yeah.
Well, it would have completely ruined the pacing.
Yeah.
Right.
Of the avalanche.
Just like a lot of deleted scenes in movies, it's like, why is this here?
Although, if this were in the original book, he might not have had to do that whole, oh, the pool only takes you if you're willing sort of thing. He still would have been able to stretch out that scene and make it.
Well, I mean, it was goofy, but there's an importance to that, which we'll talk about maybe next week.
Well, maybe not with Dave.
Yeah, well, we'll figure it out.
I'll look forward to finding out in 3 years.
Maybe.
Finish the second book.
It actually has nothing to do with Elantris and everything to do with the rest of the Cosmere.
Exactly, that's why it's going to take 3 years.
I'm happy that you think it's going to be that soon.
Oh man, this podcast is never ending.
I mean, that was part of the idea, I think.
Yeah.
That, like, it could potentially keep going more or less indefinitely. All right.
By the time we catch up to everything Brandon's written, he probably will have written a few more books, so we'll have even more.
He's
content.
Basically publishing a Cosmere novel every year, roughly.
Well, he publishes a major book every year, roughly, and then about 2/3 of those are Cosmere.
Well, we calculated it last week. It comes out to be one per year. It's just some years get a couple, some years get none. Like this year, we're not getting any Cosmere.
And, like, sometimes what he does Cosmere is, like, short stories. So, yeah. Anything else non-spoilery, or do we want to go ahead and kick Dave off?
Do we have a lot of spoilers to talk about?
Eh.
I mean, because he's read the book, so we can talk anything Elantris at this point.
We can, but Elantris overview is next week, so I want to save some of that.
I know you do.
Actually, Dave, did you think up any other full Elantris questions that you would like us to have on record and possibly written down by Tori?
Well, that's not possible.
You
that's
mean as far as just how stuff works in the world of Elantris?
Yeah, stuff you want to ask.
Basically anything at all that might have been weird or... Yeah. Because you'd be surprised at how much we actually know related to these things.
I guess not. I think I mentioned most of what I wanted to know about how the non-Aeon magic works, about how, you know, how did the religions come about from Shu Kessig. And I do have a question, actually, that I meant to... I think I meant to mention last week. Do the gods actually do anything in Elantris? So they've got Yadith, who they say was like a minor god in charge of goats or whatever until he got
charge of goats.
I don't remember, but when Serini is reading all the religious and political histories in the library. She's like, oh, it turned out Yadith used to be this minor god, and he used to just oversee cream cheese manufacturing from the goat farms, and then he wanted to be a bigger god. And so,
what's somehow... it like inside your head? It seems wonderful.
I don't know. There's too much stuff bouncing around. I obviously, the cream cheese factory part's made up. I just didn't remember exactly. I think she said specifically what Yadith was the god of. But so, I mean, if the magic comes from the land or from the dancing, then are the gods actually playing a part in the magic at all, or do they have more like a in Greek mythology, where the gods are just kind of like there as bigger characters that don't necessarily do anything, but you know.
Okay. Well, we'll remember that for next week.
Yeah, it's written down now.
So I will point out, and I think we talked about this in Cosmere episode zero, is that
I did listen to, and there is an overarching like god wheel or something.
Sure, that's not what I was going to mention. But a lot of the information that we might have, if we do happen to answer your questions, so the information that we have related to certain things. Okay, so like, someone in chat just said, do the gods do more than watch goats? Next time.
I'm not allowed to read chat.
Well, I'll read it for you if it's appropriate. So a lot of the information we come is from other Cosmere novels, because as we mentioned, it's a shared universe, so therefore there's certain things that we can apply based on how the universe works. So basically think of it as like physics. Like, we have certain rules that we know work, and we can apply it to different worlds because they're in the same shared universe. The other place we get information is what we call Word of Brandon, which is, this is stuff that isn't explicitly in the books, but he said is true, because maybe a fan asked him a question and he gave an answer, because although he's outlined it, he has the information. As you mentioned, he plans things that are happening in his novels despite not writing everything down. So it's mostly canon. I guess there is an asterisk next to that, because there's always a chance it could be changed slightly until it's in that official novel. But as far as we know, Word of Brandon is basically canon as well. So our information comes from those two majority sources.
Word of Brandon is second tier canon.
Yes.
It
so
can
if
be...
we answer your questions, it might be because there's a Word of Brandon that doesn't apply, but like, it doesn't come from the other books. If it comes from the other books, we're going to tell you to read and find out.
So, all right. I think we can get rid of Dave now.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
Next week, we'll have a fun week. You'll get all of your answers. Maybe.
I'm going to go watch Summer Games Done Quick. See you later, suckers.
And he's gone. Okay.
This concludes the spoiler-free section of our podcast. If you are, as I am, reading along for the first time, we recommend that you stop listening now, as the following will contain spoilers for not only this book, but for other Cosmere books as well. There may also be general spoilers from any other source material. Spoilers begin now.
So now is spoiler time.
Hooray!
For full Cosmere. What are the main themes of Elantris?
Themes?
Yeah.
Like the book?
Yeah, like, what are the main, like, themes of the book? Like, pretend we're doing a book report. What would you say are the main themes of Elantris? Because I have been racking my brain for a week on this, and I can't come up with anything. I've got stuff Mistborn, I've got stuff for Stormlight, I've got stuff for Warbreaker, like, everything else, I'm good. I have nothing for Elantris.
I was going to say, I don't have a simple one-word answer, but I definitely think a running theme throughout the book is this idea that, as we've said before, everyone is the hero of their own story.
Yeah, that's Sanderson in general, though.
Like, Raiden is out to save the world, basically, and Serene is out to save the world, and Prathan thinks he is saving all of these poor heathen people, and even Diloph thinks that what he is doing is for the best. So, like, just this idea that every character has their own internal agenda.
I mean, I have to say that because that's the way Sanderson writes his characters, and that is a bigger theme in Warbreaker than in Elantris, but just the fact that he looks at, like, that is how you write a great character. That's how you write great villains. If they're just evil for the sake of being evil, like, okay, they're just there for plot convenience. Whereas in Sanderson's works, like, I would say Diloph is probably the weakest villain that he's written because he's a bit stereotypical. But even looking at Hraithen, who's supposed to be an antagonist, and the role he takes, his story arc, it's just, you have, you know, the hero of your own story thing is a great approach when it comes to writing novels. Now, in terms of what I think the theme is, I think we should focus on Hraithen's story the most, because this is more his book, and his struggles that he has with his religion versus his church. I think part of the theme of the book is essentially what it means, what unity means, and what his actual religion teaches.
Faith versus religion?
Sort of, because I think that that's a big part of it. I mean, you have Raiden also going into the whole, I don't want to say, I guess a bit of, let's tie it in with the name of the book, the short story, having hope, having, being able to do things. Like, think about it. Before he came in, people just existed. They did nothing. But then part of it was having a task, having something to drive towards, and that transformed Elantris into new Elantris. And also, people weren't really actively starving. They were able to ignore the pain just a little bit. I think that's part of the theme of the book as well. As for Serene's chapters, it's a political thing. I don't know what the theming of there is, except,
I mean, I guess you could say that transformation is the overarching theme of the book, because Raiden driving the literal transformation of Elantris and the Elantrians, like, they are stuck in the middle of their transformation.
Yeah.
And Serene is trying to politically transform the landscape, while Hraithen is trying to religiously transform it. In the meantime, he himself is transformed through his faith in what he believes is right versus what his religion tells him.
I think we got this. There you go, Mike. That's the answer.
Cool. That helps out a lot, because, as I said, like, I've got pretty solid themes for, like, everything else. I couldn't get there with Elantris. So who has a topic?
I'm basically waiting for next week.
Well, since we were talking about Hope of Elantris today, and I suppose we could have mentioned this while Dave was still here, but I'm having a lot of trouble with the timeline on this story.
Yeah, I don't think it fits in as well as Dave made it sound.
Well, like, in Elantris, and my cat is playing with my wind chimes above
me. I love the wind chime. It makes it sound like you're outside sipping a lemonade.
Right. Well, it's hot enough for that sort of thing. Anyway, in Elantris, when they first visit the pool, taking that old man, they're at it all night. Like, it took them forever to get there through the tunnels. But then at the end of Elantris, when Galadin and Carita are taking Raiden to the pool, it doesn't take but, you know, maybe a couple of hours. And
so, I mean, I have a problem with that.
Part of that could be that they were going straight up the mountain rather than through the tunnels. That's fine. I'll take that one. But then when Raiden has his realization and he runs down the hill and he's just running full tilt down the hill, and it only takes them a couple of minutes when it took them a few hours to climb up there. Yes, I know going uphill is harder than downhill, but still. And then when you get to Hope of Elantris, you've got, you know, they find out that the Dakor are coming and that they're in danger, and she tries to hide the children, and then she leads the soldiers away and she gets attacked, and then the transformation happens. That didn't take a couple of hours. Like, was she leading the soldiers through the alleys for a couple of hours? It just seems like it was back-to-back-to-back action.
I didn't get that sense in, like, while reading the story, no. Like, it seemed like a very, very short amount of time. Like, she cuts down one alley and then makes one turn, and then Dakor. Not, you know, hours of cat and mouse. Although that would have been cool if he could have conveyed that like she kept them going for hours, that would have been actually pretty cool.
So I think I have an overall problem with the pacing of that last part as well. Maybe I think Sanderson had an idea of how long these things took, and just he didn't convey it that well. So I'm talking about Elantris itself, not really Hope of Elantris, but in Elantris, from what I could tell from the map and the way he's described it, is that, you know, the shard pool is up on the mountain. Like, you climb the mountain, which overlooks Kei, and it's there. And just imagine, in my life, when I've hiked up a hill or something like that, it's taken me a couple of hours, you know? It's depends on, of course, the steepness of the hill, which we have no way of knowing. But it's notable enough that it's a line in the Aeon. So it's not like it's a tiny hill. It's something that sticks up out of the land. So I imagine it takes a couple of hours to get there. And also, when you happen to be in Elantrian, then it can take longer because you're being careful or you don't have as much energy, perhaps. Although, that's not true. They have a lot of energy, because they can just basically constantly move. They just have to walk more carefully so they don't hurt themselves. But either way, it takes some time, and I don't think he conveyed it that well in the avalanche portion, where just everything's happening at once. But there is, I think, if I recall, there was that whole, when Diloph goes to Teod, don't they, like, arrive at night and then they wait for morning or something like that? Like, there's a point of time that he waits. So I would believe a lot of it falls into that there's a waiting period to sort of line and sync everything up. So I think he put some of that in, it just wasn't conveyed properly, and it can be a little confusing with how does this, like, time wise how does this work? And I know I got the impression when I first read Hope of Elantris, I felt like it was weird how it squeezed in, because I know Aishi was doing other things as well, communicating and things like that. It's just, I don't know, I just don't think it was conveyed very well.
Yeah.
I'm like, hello, what happened?
I was just waiting to see how long the dead air would last.
Yeah, you're the one who has to edit it out, so.
Yeah, silent parts are super easy. I can see that. Like, editing out silence is amazing. Like, that's actually one of my steps is, you know, I click through the visual and just edit out long silences.
Like, do you find yourself actually editing a lot of parts out? Like, I feel like we're pretty good about just talking and right over.
Like this part, for example, where we're talking about editing rather than talking about the...
Sure, you could cut this out, and I was curious about the process, but...
Yeah, this will probably not make it to the final. So no. we've got like a good, you know, couple of minutes here now where, blip, how about talking about editing out silence? I'm going to edit out the talking about editing out, the talking about editing out, the talking about editing out. The talking about editing
this,
out.
This is what I had to contribute today. You gotta leave it in.
Right, let's continue. So yeah, what else do we have? Because I feel like next week is going to be really good.
Yeah, because next week will be nice because we don't have that portion where we talk about, like, I summarize something. We can jump right into the question. So I feel like next week will be long, but we can also fit a lot of it in because we don't have a summary or anything that we have to go over. So it'll be good.
So... You want to just call it here?
I mean, I'm good. Yeah. I mean, Hope of Elantris is not a thing I really enjoy. I mean, it has feels and everything. It's like, it's nice, but I'm like, what does it really contribute to the Cosmere? Which is sad for me to say. I don't know. Some of his short stories, I sort of have a take it or leave it type feel to it, and this is one of those.
Yeah, Hope was short and not super duper substantial. So,
in that's terms all you of get. Short stories in the Elantris on Cell, Emperor Soul is the way to go. That's good stuff.
Yeah, it's real good. So, all right, I'm gonna call it.
Okay.
Bye, Internet.
Bye, Internet.
Bye, Internet.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @CosmereCast or like us on Facebook. Our theme music is Traveling Made Up Continents by Gillicuddy, used with permission. Hear more from him at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening.